pick a window. This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I am your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends in the north, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman, Laird Jeff Bell.
Hello. Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hiya.
Hello. It was just weird to hear my name all of a sudden. I was clicking on something else. I was doing show stuff. I was doing producer stuff. And I was like, oh, I participate as well.
Oh, that's right. I have to actively participate in this one.
Yep.
This is a participatory game. Yes. How was everybody's week?
Fucking dumpster fire shit show. It was
nice.
Awful. But it was just awful. Like, I don't even want to go into it. It was so bad. It just was terrible, and I'm glad to be recording today with you guys. I do have some highlights as we go into our different topics to talk about. But yeah. Yeah. How about you guys? How was your week? Hopefully better than mine.
You go ahead. My week just looks like last week.
Yeah, my week up until yesterday was like last week. It was just, looking for work, getting more and more demoralized as I just don't get any response at all to resumes. Ugh. So I went through and retooled my resume yet again to see if that will do it. I don't think it will. I'm just getting more frustrated with it every day. And I applied for two jobs that I really want, and I'm just over here going, yeah, but what's the likelihood at this point when everybody's rejecting you? You know, it gets you down after a while.
Fair. That's rough, man.
And I had a company that kind of strung me out for a month, just strung me along. You know, we had to like work extra hard to get them to even look at my resume. And this was all being handled by a recruiter. And yeah, a week ago I emailed him. I said, I think they've rejected me. He goes, yeah, I'm pretty sure they have, just because we haven't heard from them.
Wow.
It's like, well, thanks for a month of nothing, guys. Really, that I appreciate that. Yesterday I went to callbacks for the first time in 10 years.
Woo-hoo!
That was fun. I won't know until probably next weekend whether or not I'm in the show at all, whether or not I get the... It's like, I kind of want the role that I auditioned for, Sir Toby, but at the same time, I'm like, I'll take any role. So if I get a part, I'll be happy with it. Yeah.
Nice.
Basically, I'm like, I either want Sir Toby or the priest who has all of like four lines and he's done and he's in one scene. I'm like, I'll take that. Just give me those two. Give me the choice between those two and I'll be happy. this was an audition at a little theater here in Utah, in Salt Lake, called the Parker Theater. My daughter texts me in the middle of callbacks and asks, hey, my friend who her best friend is stage managing the current show at the Parker, which is, my favorite play of all time, The Importance of Being Earnest. And she said, hey, she can get us comp tickets to it. You want to go? And I'm like, at 3:30, I'm like, well, as long as I'm done with callbacks by noon, which I hope I am, yes, we can go. And, got home and basically turned around and drove back to the damn theater again.
How was the show?
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. Yeah. I, of course, it needed a bigger audience and it needed an audience who understood the material a little better. The big laughs came toward the end of the play, which I'm sorry, that play, I'm chuckling the whole play because every line is funny. Every single thing said is funny to me because it is so absurd and ironic and so beautifully written. And I just love the play to death. It's one of the greatest comedies ever written. And goddamn, still my favorite show. But they did do it in Victorian style. 1899. There were some things there were choices they made that I would never make, but I'm like, well, different director, different actors, that sort of thing. Let it go.
It's true.
Enjoy the show for what it is. Weird split of the second act, and then they basically decided to move everything into the location in the third act that takes place in the second act. So it was kind of an odd little shift. A big chunk of lines were cut, and I don't know if that was the actors who did it or if it was the director's choice. So those were the other things that I would say were big bugs to me. Everything else, I was like, I don't care. I loved it. Loved it.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's it. Next week is the Utah Scottish Festival and Highland Games. So you know that's where I'm going to be all weekend, including Sunday, recording day. So... it's up to Jeff and Joss if they want to do a sidekick show or if they just want to do something else. Tickets are available at utahscots.org, we're going to say. Oh, yeah, utahscots.org. And $25 for a three-day pass. I think individual days probably be about $10, if that's the price.
All right, fair.
Yeah.
Where is it at?
The Utah State Fair Park.
Oh, okay. I know where that is.
Yeah. So we'll be out barbecuing in the middle of the fair park in our tents, showing off everything, doing our stuff. Lots of Scottish clans will be represented. All the good stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Cool.
Stop by my tent. You can try to draw the sword from the stone.
Oh.
Yep.
All right. All right.
All right. And on that note, anything else we need to cover?
Nope.
No.
All right, let's dive into some news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
a widow has been left heartbroken when she discovered her late husband's rare comic book collection has been stolen from her home. After the books had been in his family for generations. Amy Williams' husband, Johnny Williams, died from a heart attack in 2022. Just 2 years after they welcomed their son, Macari, into the world. He just wanted to love me for eternity, she told the outlet. Enough that I didn't get my forever. I'm glad I gave him his forever. Oh, my God. That's so sweet. Jesus Christ. Honey, write that one down for when I die first, will you?
Yes. Yes.
He'd left behind two bins of comic books. And said that, besides being rare and kept in pristine condition, they held an even greater sentimental value to his legacy. Last month, while she was out of town, someone broke into her home, stole the two bins containing about 400 books. A lot of comic book collectors at this point would go, that's it. But I'm looking at pictures, and he had some amazing shit.
And the majority of them were slabbed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 400 in two bins, I'm like, really? Two bins? That only took two bins to hold 400 books that are slabbed. That's cool.
He was so passionate about his collection, he had a YouTube channel where he would discuss his love for comic books. I've actually seen a couple of the videos. He was pretty... He really liked what he did. Before his death, she often found her husband lost in reading the comic books from his collection and even reading them to her infant son.
Aww.
He wanted them passed down to my son and to my son's kids. Basically, you broke my kid's heart. You broke my family's heart by doing what you did. Even though she's faced some financial hardship since her husband died, it never crossed her mind to sell off his collection. You couldn't put a price tag on it, she said. I could. It's what I do for a living.
That's what you do.
Right.
But basically, for those of you that are in comics and all of that, you know, just keep an eye out for, honestly, people that have cool shit that look like they shouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The guys, I don't think they put his name into the, did they put his name in the article?
Johnny Williams?
Johnny Williams. So if these are slabbed, his name will be on it. If they try to sell it to a shop. his name will be on the slab, or, you know, when they scan it or whatever. So in that case, you could, you know, confiscate him and call the cops. If this, you know, if we have any Vegas comic book shop listeners, that's who's probably going to try to sell them to. If the thief doesn't just take him to a pawn shop or something.
Yep.
But yeah, Johnny Williams' stuff will be, I mean, like I said, if they're slabbed, his name will be on them.
Sort of.
I also want to point
Not
out.
Really. Maybe. Could yeah. be. Depends on who he bought them from. Depends on how he got them. If he's the one yeah. who actually ran the slab, then yeah, it should be able to trace back to him. But, yep. you know, if he picked it up from someone else, from this and that and the other, it's certainly not a foolproof system, but it's basically like when the meth head from down the street comes in with a $600 comic book.
Yeah.
Go ahead and check your CGC account and see whether or not you can track that one back.
Yep.
Yeah.
I also want to point out their son, Makari. Makari is named for a character in Marvel Comics, one of the Eternals. Mm-hmm. The speedster in the Eternals. I was so happy about that. Yes.
Great name. Doctor Who legend William Russell, best known for playing a school teacher, Ian Chesterton, has died at the age of 90-fucking-9.
Jesus Christ.
Confirmed death of the actor, who survived by his wife, Etheline. I love that name.
Etheline.
Yeah, died on the 3rd of June, 2024. He first appeared in An Unearthly Child, the first ever Doctor Who story, alongside William Hartnell, who played the first Doctor, Carol Ann Ford, who played companion Susan, and Jacqueline Hill, who played fellow teacher Barbara Wright. He appeared in almost all of the episodes of the first two seasons of Doctor Who. He eventually left the show with Hill in 1965 towards the end of the second season, but continued his association with Doctor Who, narrating audiobooks, releases of lost 1960s episodes, and appearing in audio stories.
Yes.
Yep.
He most recently appeared in an episode, the episode where you had the companion support group. I guess it was the end of the Jodie Whittaker run.
Oh.
And he was there in the companion support group, at very old man, but just still clear-minded, talking about his adventures with the Doctor and stuff. I was like, oh my God, it's Chesterton, and he's still alive. Holy shit.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, one of Ant-Man and the Wasp's Quantumania top stars heads off into retirement after starring in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Evangeline Lilly will not play the Wasp ever again.
Okay.
You know,
I mean, okay.
Her weird shit about the fucking vaccine has put me in such conflict with her.
Because she's problematic, so I'm not sorry to see her go.
Kinda. I mean, she's not anti-vax. She's anti-mandate.
Yeah.
And it's like, right. you know, when my kids went to school, there was a pretty heavy fucking mandate on the kids getting their shots.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just like to point out that we mandate a lot of fucking vaccines, kid. And on this one, I think we also should have to mandate it. I think kids should get their COVID shots, because otherwise they're just going to carry that shit home and kill their parents.
Right.
Agreed.
Yep.
Agreed.
Yep. Anyway, so she posted a throwback video to mark her acting retirement from a fan account of the TV classic Lost, where she made her name. It shows Lily outlining her career ambitions, admitting her desire to retire within 10 years and start a family. In the caption, the Canadian actor said she's filled with joy and contentment to live out her vision, while admitting the decision was scary. Stepping away from what seems like the obvious choice, wealth and fame, can feel scary at times, but stepping into your dharma replaces the fear with fulfillment.
Oh, okay.
I'll just sum that up for you. I got enough money. I'm doing fine. So I don't want to do Marvel anymore.
Right.
You know?
Right. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Now that I'm filthy fucking rich, I can stop working. What a hero I am.
She's fulfilling her dharma.
There's no reason to keep working. I can I can sit around and do nothing.
She
I
can
love it.
Swim around in her vault full of gold coins. She can affect right, a Scottish accent.
Let's all be honest. Those are life goals anyway.
Oh, this it's is true. Great. Swimming around be in honest. A big sea of money. Oh, I love being Evangeline Lilly. It's so great. I'm pretty. I'm rich.
I'm wealthy and rich. Look at me swimming in my gold.
Look at this. Oh, we don't call it gold. We call it Dharma. That is it for the news.
All right. Let's take a little break. When we come back, we're going to Tinseltown.
Ooh, Tinseltown. I used to work there, you know.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and
sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Tell me. There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
So, what have you guys been watching that's come out of Tinseltown this last week? Joss?
So, I finished up watching Outer Range with my mama for our Friday night movie watching or TV watching adventures. And, oh my God, I love Josh Brolin, you guys. I just love him. So then, of course, this week I also watched Goonies and I watched Deadpool and I watched Deadpool 2. We did a lot of Josh Brolin in my house. Also on Amazon, Patton Oswalt has a new game show called The 1% Club. Yeah. And it's a quiz show. I love a quiz trivia show once in a while, and I like Patton Oswalt.
Too much exposition. Too much exposition. And what I got it. Mean? And he was adorable, and I liked him. But it's like, bring on the fucking trivia right now. It was like 10 seconds of trivia versus 2 minutes of him, you know, doing crowd work. And I love his crowd work, but this is scripted crowd work, and I did not care for that.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, I got 2 episodes in, and I'm like, nah, this is way too slow for me.
I only watched 1 episode, so good to know it doesn't get any better. That may make my decision easier moving forward.
Yeah. It looks very familiar. It looks very similar to a Fox game show they did, doing about the same kind of thing.
Well, it honestly felt like something that was made for a network that didn't get picked up for a network.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I was waiting for it to show up on Fox, honestly. When I saw the commercial, I'm like, oh, that'll be on Fox. And I saw, and then later I saw the commercial, I was like, oh, that's on Amazon. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Weird. Yeah. But yeah, it's very, there was a Fox show where they, last year, where they had, you know, an audience, big, full audience, and you answered trivia questions, and basically the closer you got, the sooner or later, whoever answered the most questions got to be in the finals. And I think that's basically the same.
Yeah. So
these are just different kind of questions because he's using brain teasers and stuff. So, yeah.
Right.
It is fun. I did like the fact that the difficulty escalated at a really good ramp. And it was weird how many fucking easy questions I didn't get. And then and then how many of the hard ones I did nail down. And I was like, I don't understand what this means. Probably that I have ADD. I think that's what this means.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be that's where my retention centers were working that day.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Exactly.
Yep.
So, and then the other notable thing that I watched that you guys, if you haven't watched it, you have to watch it because you'll love it, is Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling. And Jeff, I think, Jeff, did you manage to see it?
I did. I watched it last night. It managed to hang on to Tiffany's attention for about 8 minutes.
And then
she went to sleep. But I laughed my ass off all the way through. I mean, and they did. There were so many good just little itty bitty little Easter eggs, like the Bionic Man noise when he threw that one guy, and I just I'm like, barf, rah, 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 rah. That was funny. You know, there were all these just little nods to it. And then, did you stay for the after credit stuff?
Yeah, I really did.
I liked it more than I thought I did. I really liked the chemistry between Gosling and what's her name?
Emily Blunt.
They were just cute as fuck together, which I did not think.
Right.
I didn't think they would be. I was like, what a weird pairing when I saw the first commercial. And then this time I went through. The stunts were fucking amazing. Oh my god. It was a movie that is a love letter to stunt folk. And
it really is.
The fun of that was in the credits when they were showing all of the stunts, you know, as behind the scenes. So this is the mechanics of it as opposed to here it is on the screen. It was just, it was fun. I really liked it. I've got 48 hours to watch it, which means I'm going to watch it again today.
Nice. You absolutely should. I want to see it back in theaters one more time because it was so good on the big screen.
And seriously, you know what? Who else doesn't age is fucking Emily Blunt. You know?
And Ryan Gosling. Like, let's be honest.
He was really pretty with a beard.
He's just really pretty, period.
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far.
That's okay. You don't have to. Yeah. I like him. But yes, I love letter, like total love letter to the stunt world. It was a love story and an action adventure movie all wrapped up into one. It had some fun twists. It wasn't serious, deep thought movie, but it was fantastic. It was really well done.
Hannah Waddingham was delightful.
Does he make a joke at the end that he's going to become a bounty hunter or something?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope.
Because that was the whole concept of the original Lee Majors show was he was a bounty hunter. A stuntman who moonlighted as a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
So anyways, what else did you watch, Jeff? Anything else to
speak on? An awkward fucking week of After Midnight.
Yeah?
I mean, the shows were great, and I laughed, and I do that. But they're mixing bits to try and make the show flow a little better, and I think that it flowed just fine before. So everything's a little weird. The whole credit card waiter thing, what the fuck was that all about? I mean, what fever dream did that one pop out of?
The endings, a lot of the ending games haven't made sense.
The original
For the Win, because they don't even call it For the Win, she just calls it the end game, and it was like For the Win made sense, and you didn't know, like, these and I guess it was because they were bringing in actors instead of comedians, so they had to write. And actors are like, I don't know how to write anything. So, I think that was the problem. But I was like that the comedians would write a joke and the audience would applaud for the joke without knowing who wrote it. So that it was, I was like the randomness of it.
Yep.
You know, and I didn't like I haven't liked the ending for a while, but I still watch the show.
Yeah. I am enjoying the shit out of the show. And she had some really interesting outfits this week. It's weird to me that I'm paying attention to a lady's fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And not because I want to see her without the fashion, per se. I mean, I do, but you know, basically just like, oh, look at the pantsuit they put her in today. Oh, look at that. Oh, she's wearing jeans. Oh, how fantastic is that? She must be much more comfortable today. It's weird.
I just like the last one with the black suit. And then all of her, she had three comedians who are all friends of hers. They all come out in black suits with black. She had a suit with a tie. And they all come out in black suits and ties. Just to fuck with her. I thought that was great.
It was. And that lady with the squeaky voice.
Yes.
Who the first time she talked, I'm like, oh, she's going to bug the fuck out of me. Ended up being so goddamn funny, you know, that I looked up her stand up and I'm going to watch some of that today as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's
fucking hilarious. But yeah, that was a really good show. I really enjoyed that whole fucking show. I did. But yeah, the week was great. It was just, it ended weird.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Game Changer over on Dropout, in Emmy contention, Game Changer.
Wow.
We're coming down to the end of season 6. Part 1 of the final episode dropped this week, which means that part 2 drops next week. It's a 2-week release schedule because they're a small production outfit. If you watch Game Changer, you'll see just how incredibly fucking involved these shows are. I can't imagine doing one of them in a week. especially this season. This season has just been fucking top shelf all the way through.
Nice.
And then Dark Matter. Dark Matter over there on Apple TV.
Oh, yeah.
I still don't know how I feel about this show. I'm three episodes in, I believe, and I don't know if I like it. I like the actor. I can't remember his name. I like Jennifer Connelly's in it. She's fucking great. No, it's just a lot of really good performances in a story I don't care about, I think. You know? I think that's really what it comes down to, is it's like interesting setup, interesting put together. You know, the stories work really well. The science fiction in it is fun, and yet it hasn't hooked me, and it should have by now. But everybody's so fucking good in it that I'm having a hard time not watching it. I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's a little harder sci-fi than you know, Star Wars. You know,
okay.
it's a little hard science versus science fiction. So I don't know. You know, if you've got a minute, throw on that first episode and it's got a good twist at the end that you might go, oh, I'm interested, because that's what happened to me. What about you, sir?
So for me this week, The Acolyte dropped on Disney Plus, new Star Wars show, takes place prequels. So it's in the Old Republic.
100 years and, before the Skywalker saga.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
And so
okay.
We know Yoda will be around at some point. I hope he shows up. Even a small cameo, because Yoda would still be an active Jedi at this point. But yeah, it's a murder mystery. Now, I found some interesting mixed reactions. Well, at least a mixed reaction between myself reviewing it and other people I know who are reviewers who reviewed it. There's a twist that comes very early. And they were like, I wish they played the twist out a little bit longer. And I'm over here going, oh, fuck, that's the twist. And I think it's a difference in generations, just because, you know, they're millennial or even Gen Z, these people I follow. And then I'm over here going, that's been done to death. But I'm like, well, maybe not to them, because I think my generation was like, that's been done to death, and they stopped doing it. So now it's back, and I'm like, and we're all like, oh, that again?
You know, I mean, this is just one that I slipped on. Because Monday was so long ago.
Yeah.
I went and saw The Acolyte at Jordan Commons on the big screen.
Oh.
So I saw the first two episodes. I went with Mr. Weiniger, because we haven't seen each other in about a year.
Yeah.
Yikes. And I'm not going to spoil.
For me.
Yeah. I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm going to say one thing. What the fuck, cameo? What the fuck?
Right? What the fuck?
Okay. That made...
Good to know.
Michelle was like, I'm going to really like this show.
Nope.
And then that happens, and I was like, because that's one of her favorite people, and it was like, God damn it.
Oh,
anyway, we're stopping there, because anything else is a spoiler.
Yeah, stop there. I was going to say, that's going to be my mom show starting this week, is now that we finished Outer Range, like, so.
Yeah. I did say to her, and I would say to anybody who's like, what the fuck? We don't know everything that happened, so there'll probably be a flashback episode or two where she'll get to be in it again. So that's all I'm saying.
There better be.
Yeah.
There better be, or I am burning this place to the ground.
That's right.
Yeah.
I watched, season two of Interview with the Vampire started like 4 weeks ago. So we're like, fuck, we got to get caught up. So we fortunately had nothing else going on. So we watched that. I'm actually, okay, I'm over the whole, it's loosely based on the original book. And I'm enjoying, like, it opens up with them heading to Europe to look for other vampires during World War II. And I kind of dug that, because it was a lot better than it being in the 19th century when they went over, even though you had a lot of the wars going on anyway. When they do land in Paris, it's so great. They handle the Theater de Vampire very well. All of the infighting, all that stuff is handled very well. I've enjoyed the hell out of it. Sad they only do about 7 or 8 episodes a season. Because it's so well done. And then, yeah, I watched The Daily Show, watched After Midnight. We talked about that. The other one, I'm only going to talk about this one time, but MasterChef. So I watch MasterChef every season. I enjoy it. This season, they're doing the Battle of the Generations. So they're taking five chefs from each generation, starting with the boomers, because there aren't any silent generation people left, really. So start with they got the boomers, Gen X, Millennial, Gen Z.
Hey, we're there.
Here's what I liked about it. They started with the first week was the millennials getting their aprons, you know, competing to get their aprons to be on the millennial team. This week it was the boomers. And I'm like, as they're coming to the end of the episode, I'm like, please show me in the scenes for next week that you're doing Gen Z. Because that's funny to me. And it's Gen Z next week, which means Gen X is forgotten once again.
Skipped right over them.
And it's funny because I know Gordon Ramsay, he's my age. Aaron Sanchez is around my age. I think he's in his 40s, but he's still Gen X Zennial. And Joe Bastianich is definitely around my age. So they're all Gen Xers. But yeah, it was just funny. I'm like, they could walk out and say, well, actually, we're saving the best for last because it's our generation. I'm like, no, you were playing the great joke, which is we're stepped right over and forgotten.
Always.
It's the best time. It's actually a brand. It's on brand for us. So we just think it's great. Our generation just laughs at it. So, yeah. But yeah, and otherwise, I mean, it's a cooking show. I enjoy cooking shows, but yeah, and I don't need to talk about it after this. So that was just funny to me.
That is
funny. So let's look at some news. What's some news out of Tinseltown?
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
Paramount announces a $500 million budget cut to prepare with its merger.
Yep.
With Skydance.
It's so that everybody makes money in the merger.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. And by everybody, I mean all the investors. None of the actual workers will make money.
Right.
In fact, $500 million budget cut means there's going to be some layoffs.
Yep.
And some suspensions of television shows. Yes.
Yep. You know what I'm worried about?
Star Trek?
Yep. The decision is part of a broader strategy and streamline operations ahead of the potential landmark merger with Skydance. The media conglomerates scramble to realign their business models to the digital age. Paramount's latest strategy underscores a critical pivot towards sustainability and competitiveness. Whatever. The restructuring is crucial to maintain a competitive edge and ensure they don't continue to thrive, ensure that they continue to thrive in a rapidly evolving media landscape. Okay, super.
Yeah.
The reason you have $500 million to cut from your budget is because of people like me that subscribe to your fucking network to watch what we want to watch.
Right.
Yeah.
And all this means to me is you guys are going to go fucking unscripted in game shows again. Now, I could just be jumping to conclusions. I may just be pissy, but you know what? Shit like this never seems to flow to the fans. It always seems to just fucking cater to the lowest common denominator, by which I mean reality television.
Mm-hmm.
Ta-da!
Well, it's the cheapest thing to make.
Fuck
period. You don't have to pay the people on it much, if anything at all. Room and board is about all they get paid. You don't have to pay. You don't have to pay for a lot of crew or anything like that. You certainly don't have to pay for a special effects team or anything. You don't have to drive. You don't have to fly everybody up to Vancouver or out to fucking Georgia to film it. You can do it all there in LA or wherever the fuck you're going to film it. No, there's advantages monetarily to it, but it's nothing I want to watch. And if Paramount goes to that, I can tell you that's an easy subscription to cut.
Yep. Yeah, but I mean, if Paramount owns CBS, MTV, and Comedy Central.
Yep.
Right.
You know? Skydance is fucking huge.
And Star Trek.
Yep.
They own Star Trek. That's what really kills me.
Prey 2 with Amber Midthunder got an exciting update. Mm-hmm. A separate standalone film has gotten a major update. There are still plans for Prey to get its own follow-up movie. The great star, Elle Fanning, is in talk to star in Badlands, a standalone film that's set in the Predator universe. Though it's not directly connected to Prey, the film will be helmed by the same director, Dan Trachtenberg, who co-wrote the script with Patrick Eisen. That was announced back in February. The update on Badlands may be casting some doubt with fans that Prey will get a sequel. I don't know. Now, look, would I like to see Amber Midthunder fight Predators again? Yeah. But nobody else got a fucking sequel, for Christ's sake. Why is this news? Why do people, are they getting bent? There was a Predator 2. And guess who wasn't in it? Anybody from Predator 1.
Well, to be fair, only one person survived Predator 1, and that was Arnold.
Yeah. And we don't know that he made it out of the jungle. He could have got a spider bite and died. We don't know.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know.
They didn't finish that. I didn't get an epilogue.
No, it's actually a big deal. If she is able to return, it would mark the first time any lead, or in most cases, any survivor from Predator actually gets to return, apart from the Predator.
Yep.
Because Arnold didn't return for Predator 2. That was
Danny Glover.
Danny Glover. And Danny Glover didn't return for Predator 3 because they did the whole Predator versus Aliens thing. For a couple of movies.
Yep.
I would love to see Prey 2 return or come back with Amber Midthunder in the role. I would love to see it. So
it'd have to be a revenge flick.
Yeah.
You got Mrs. Predator coming to avenge the death of Mr. Predator or some shit, because otherwise there's no fucking reason, because they're just out having a holiday. That's what the Predators do. They go to places and they hunt shit.
Right.
You know?
Well, it could be they got to go pick up the dude's ship and find out what happened to him. And then, of course, that draws their attention to this tribe. And they're like, well, if we hunt them, you know, that's better game than anything. And then she just goes in and kicks their asses.
She can train an army of Predator hunters.
Exactly. Ooh. And you would need, and basically it should be like 5 to 10 Predators coming to hunt to make it a really proper sequel, I would say.
Prey had a 93 score on Rotten Tomatoes. It was fucking great.
Nice.
It was great. And I've watched it, I think, 3 times now.
Yeah, one of the best Predator movies ever made.
Yep.
Yeah.
Deadpool and Wolverine helm. I to direct Avengers 5. What an awkward fucking headline. Deadpool and Wolverine helmer. Is that even a word?
I don't believe it is. I'm going
to
check.
To direct Avengers 5. Sean Levy could be diving deeper into the Marvel Cinematic Universe with his next big project. He's reportedly in the running to take on the new Avengers sequel. Deadpool and Wolverine director Sean Levy is the top choice to direct Avengers 5. He's reportedly in early talks to potentially direct the film. I swear to God, if we say potentially one more time, I'm going to freak the fuck out. But he has not yet committed to the project. He has reportedly been given the latest script from Michael Waldron. So, anyway, a news story that's not news. It's like two people saw each other in a coffee shop and said hello. Marvel!
The top result for Helmer on Google is a filing cabinet from IKEA. Just for the record. I'm gonna go with it's not an English word.
It's not a proper word, yeah.
It's not a proper English word.
Fair enough.
Be clear.
Yes.
All right.
I think, you know, basically because they lost the Shang-Chi director who was going to take on Avengers 5, they lost him because he's like, I can't keep waiting for you people to get around to filming, so I gotta go work on other things. They're basically anybody who's making a movie at Marvel, is directing a movie at Marvel. They're like, read this script, see if you want to direct it. We'll put you on board.
There's a Marlon Brando biopic coming out. This is a dumb article. I really shouldn't have actually included this one. Only for the reason that it's visual and this is an audio format. But Marlon Brando is getting his own biopic. Billy Zane will be playing Marlon Brando, and the pictures of Billy Zane as Marlon Brando are fucking eerie as shit. Because
he looks like Marlon Brando
so much.
There's only one of the photographs. I was like, "Well, that's Marlon Brando." Well, that's Marlon Brando. And finally, I get to one photograph. I'm like, "Okay, I see the Billy Zane in that. I see Billy Zane, not Marlon Brando." But man, every other photo, I was like, "Holy shit! Well done, makeup crew. Give these fuckers an Oscar for this one."
It's when you really look at it, it's weird how little they had to do. They had to fuck with his hair and his chin. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's amazing. I mean, it is. And like, did I give a shit about a Marlon Brando biopic before this? No. But does Billy Zane, the star of such wonderful features as Demon Knight and The Phantom, but Demon Knight?
And The Phantom.
I fucking love Demon Knight. You know me. I don't do horror movies. I don't do comedy horror movies very often unless Sam Raimi's involved. But Demon Knight was fucking hilarious. And Billy Zane was great in that. So,
I like how you're skipping over Orlando and Titanic. That's just awesome.
I don't recall those two. Now, Orlando was good.
I always like to say Twin Peaks star Billy Zane, because he was John Justice, whatever his last name was, in Twin Peaks.
Yeah,
Audrey's season two boyfriend.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. So anyway, it's a coming. I don't know if it's going to be good or bad, but I'll tell you what, Billy Zane looks fucking great. Netflix is finally getting a new season of Star Trek Prodigy. Second season of Trek's most underrated series is coming. Set in the late 24th century, after Voyager, but before the flashbacks of Picard. The events of Prodigy focus mostly on a troop of ragtag teenage aliens fighting the Cylons. And oh, no, I'm sorry, ragtag. No, that's what threw me.
Ragtag 3 off there.
Yep. Anyway, by the second half of season 1, the cruise, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's coming out July 1st on Netflix. Season 2, nice. July 1st, Netflix.
And honestly, if you were at all, in any way, a fan of Voyager, and you've skipped Prodigy, go watch it on Netflix, the first season. You will love it. And it's a love letter to Voyager. It really is.
Yeah.
It's such a great show. And then you move into season 2, and this is going to be even more Voyager than the last one. You know, you're going to get, well, for one thing, the Doctor is going to be involved in helping train these young kids to be Starfleet officers. So I'm excited for that.
Nice.
Outer Range, excuse me so much. Outer Range season 3 got a hopeful update from Josh Brolin. Recent comments from Outer Range star Josh Brolin have fans excited about a potential season 3 of the series. After more than 2 years, the Amazon Prime Video Neo Western returned to the platform in mid-May with the long-awaited second season. So anyway, he said, "I think it would be intriguing, which I can't believe me saying because I don't want to stay with anything too long, but the series, just as an idea and as an experience, has gotten more intriguing the further we've gone on with it, so I think that season 3 would be amazing." Oh, okay. The star of the show has said that he would really love to keep his job. Write a news article about it.
Exactly.
It's a hopeful update.
It better be a hopeful update because they ended it in such a way that it needs a season 3 to wrap all the stories up.
Yep. Yep. I'm with you. Anyway.
We won't get one because I love it.
Maybe. Maybe. And then in breaking news, that's a week old. In breaking news, Paramount and Skydance have agreed to a terms of a merger deal.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so it could be announced anytime in the next few days.
Yay.
Yeah, but waiting for it to get announced all week because I saw this, I think,
Monday
or Tuesday. Yeah, and I'm like, at some point you guys need to make the official announcement. But I'm sure this whole, you know, they're going through the budget cuts and all the other things and trying to decide what they're going to work on and blah, blah, blah. And
where the fuck why is SEC not involved in breaking down what is becoming a monopoly? Why is the FCC allowing this to happen? Why are all the government agencies like, hey, you know what? Let's make a bad idea as far as corporate conglomerates go.
Oh, for the answer to that, listen to the Left Show every week on this network.
Yeah, we'll talk to you about that. Anyway, gang, that's it for the news.
All right.
All right, another break, and when we come back, we're talking comics.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
So, last week, we... Joss was told to eat a bag of dicks.
A warm,
yeah, it was.
A warm Jeff, bag.
And Jeff said, we're putting it in the microwave, so it's a warm bag of dicks,
yep.
For that matter.
Yep.
Yeah. And she made a plea over social media, all the social medias,
yeah.
that listeners needed to write in, to listen to the, people need to listen to the episode and then write in defending Joss.
Right.
How many of those emails have we received so far?
Hold on, I'm still counting. Because zero is an infinite number. I could be doing this for a while, but apparently nobody came to your defense.
That makes me so sad. I thought for sure Sarah Willoughby had my back in this situation. She was all supportive on social media.
Yeah, we call those clicktivists.
Yep.
You know, activists that do their activism by liking things.
Hey, I just really wanted somebody to back me up on that.
I'll back you up. Bell was out of line. He shouldn't have said such things. About the only saving grace is that he didn't want you to have to eat them cold.
Hey, there is still time. If you're listening today, go back and listen to last week's show. You can still send us an email and defend me.
I swear to God, if any time in the next calendar year we get an email about it, we will read it out loud.
We will read it out loud on the air. Yes. This is going to happen. Anything for listener engagement. We haven't had listener engagement since Rhiannon used to write in about once every few weeks.
Yeah, we used to get letters from her. We used to get letters from our lawyer. We used to get letters from all over the place. And then everybody's comfortable and feels like we can read their minds.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do? Anyway, why? I can't remember why I told you to eat a bag of dicks. I can't remember.
Because she was being ageist.
Because pointing out the age difference between you two and myself in a kind and gentle and loving way.
Yes, that's how I would describe it. Gentle and loving.
So the problem is that the dicks in the middle are cold.
Yeah.
And the dicks on the outside are too hot.
So it's like a frozen burrito.
You want to shake them up a little, maybe put a little butter on them. You know, let that heat dissipate
and let it kind of and let it sit for a good minute before.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 minutes before.
Let the sauce thicken.
Yeah, let the sauce thicken.
I know the listeners can't hear it, but I'm laughing so hard I can't breathe. So.
Oh my God!
Okay,
let's change the subject with some comic book news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
Captain America is assembling his own team of Avengers, including Night Thrasher. What? Photon.
No.
Okay, She-Hulk. All right, and one of the Power Pack kids.
Yes.
I have never read a headline that makes me want to read the Avengers less.
Oh, really?
Night Thrasher? Are you kidding me? Jesus Christ. It's like something Liefeld chat.
The irony is that Night Thrasher was, he like joined the Avengers for like a minute back in the 90s. And then they found out he was only like 16 years old. They're like, yeah, you need parental permission if you're going to do this. Yep. We really can't be can't be responsible for anybody under the age of 18 on this team.
Meanwhile, Peter Parker's just.
By then, Parker was, in his 20s, but because he's like permanently in his 20s. But, yeah, it was funny. I was watching. I remember when I saw Night Thrasher, like new Avenger. I'm like, he's not a new Avenger. So
new young Avenger.
New a young Avenger, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, kid. You're gonna have to go play for the farm team.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little baseball for Jocelyn there to make up.
I do like the baseball.
Calling her a corgi.
I do like the baseball. Yep.
Anyway, Captain America was not the Avengers founder, but he's found Earth's Mightiest. He's been around Earth's Mightiest Heroes for so long that it feels wrong when Steve Rogers isn't on the team. That's true. Now, after a year of Marvel's Avengers without the original Sentinel of Liberty in charge, Steve Rogers has struck out on his own. Screw you guys. I'm going to make my own Avengers with hookers and blow. Yep.
I like it.
So, yeah, that's coming. That's
what I like about this. I like two things about this and hate three things about this. How's
okay.
That sound? I like that they're going to be based out of Avengers Mansion again, which they haven't been based out of for over a decade. Like, I think almost 15 years they haven't been in the Avengers Mansion because they moved to the tower, right, that we see in the movies, but they'd moved to that Avengers Tower and then wound up in the Sentinel.
The corpse.
Out in the Arctic. The corpse of the Sentinel, or not the Sentinel, the
Celestial.
Celestial. Out in the Arctic, and now they're up on a floating city in space, and they haven't worked out of the mansion, even though it got rebuilt. They haven't worked out of it for all this time. So I like that they're back in the mansion. I like the idea that this is a first response team. So in a lot of ways, it's almost like your superhero fire department, where you got a couple of people who are full timers, and then everybody else it's who gets there. Right, it's the volunteers who show up, and I kind of like that idea.
Yep.
So they're gonna have a rotating cast of characters and a rotating group of artists, which is that one might bother me a little bit, but I think I like the idea. Now I don't like they're calling it the Avengers Emergency Response Squad or Avengers. And they're trying to hyphenate that to Avengers. I don't like that either. And then they're all getting matching jackets as a throwback to the 90s. And I'm like, it was dumb in the 90s. Don't do it again.
Matching jackets?
It's like the pink ladies from Greece.
I love it. I love it. That's
If you want to see what it's going to look like, go over to the comicbookpodcast.com. Click on the link and the link roundup at the bottom, and the very first image you will see is all of them wearing their matching jackets. And kind of this image of them wearing their matching jackets, and it is just
ridiculous.
Yeah, it's as ridiculous as it sounds. Because they all have to roll their sleeves up, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Well, it's why not just put them in high-vis vests?
Yeah,
you know,
right? That's really it.
Right.
That's really it. But they decided to go back to the matching jackets, including Captain America wearing a matching jacket, Hercules finally putting a shirt on, or at least a jacket. I'm like, it's dumb. And I can't wait to see them all get torn to pieces. But that was what I didn't like. And then, of course, my third is Night Thrasher's on the team. I'm excited to see Lightspeed being... We haven't seen her since...
The last time her copyright was up for review?
Yeah, basically. I think it was in the Runaways. I think we saw her as almost an adult, as a young adult. And so, but then they keep like de-aging power pack back to children, and then and I'm like, so is that not official canon? And then now I, we're going to see her as an Avenger, which I guess makes it canon at that point. So
anyway, and, the rotating cast that's coming through is Captain America, Wasp, even though she retired, Hawkeye, Clint Barton, Hawkeye, Hercules, She-Hulk, Photon, Night Thrasher, Lightning, Wonderman, Shang-Chi, and Lightspeed. Mm-hmm. So that'll be, it's only a 5-issue mini, so I'll pick it up.
Yep. I'll be buying it.
And then,
I like the idea of a response squad. It's like, oh shit, something bad's happening. Cap just puts out a call.
Go stick your finger in the dike while we try and get Thor to answer the phone.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. The Witcher, Edge of the World, is bringing one of Geralt of Rivia's earliest adventures into comic books. Incredibly popular video game, live action streaming series, started all the way back with Andrzej Sapkowski's. I mean, that's just some Russian shit right there. Anyway. His original collection of short stories. Now continuing with its series of Witcher-related comic books, Dark Horse is adapting another of those original short stories into The Witcher, The Edge of the World, a hardcover original graphic novel. I'm excited about this.
Yeah.
I like it. So, anyway, a lot of exposition in this article that is pretty fucking pointless. But yeah, this is going to be a good one. Dark Horse is doing a good job with a lot of their borrowed IP right now. So
they've got a Witcher series running right now. You could probably back issue it all the way back to number one. I think it's only, let's see, where are we at with it? It's issue two. You could find issue one easily then. but it's a Corvo Bianco is the name of this story, which is probably one of the Witcher books being adopted again.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this news.
Well, let's talk about what we've been reading this last week. Joss, what are your reviews?
I got to pick up Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, number 15. This was the final issue of this series from Jason Aaron, and it was just beautiful. You guys, the art was beautiful. The story wrap up was amazing. It was heartbreaking. It was heartwarming. I can't speak enough to how fantastic they did on this job, on this book. So Jason Aaron wrote it. Nick Dragota and Rico Renzi were our penciler and our artist and our color, and just gorgeous book, you guys. Also got to read Scarlet number 1 from Kelly Thompson.
Oh,
and
how was that?
Let me tell you how that was. I loved it, and I care about a G.I. Joe character. If you could have told me, even 6 weeks ago, that I was going to be like, I cannot wait to see what happens, and I actually may need to read more of this universe as it comes out, I would have laughed at you. But I really, really, really liked this. It has a very, I recognize that you guys were probably big G.I. Joe fans or are big G.I. Joe fans. I found G.I. Joe to be rather obnoxious in the 80s and 90s because my little brother loved it so much.
What?
Yeah, so I didn't care. Like, I don't know the legacy. I don't know the story. It was just a dumb show my brother liked, right? So this had a very spy-esque feeling, which I recognize they're a covert operation. I get it. But it was just really well done. I was very impressed. It hooked me. I'm excited to see more of this.
You know, the only other one I've read in the universe so far is Duke.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty good, too.
Okay.
You know, like, it comes out, and I'm like, oh, good, cool. I want to read that.
I might have to pick that one up, too.
I'm reading the regular series, and I still have no fucking idea what's going on. because it picked up where Larry Hama left off and does not go back to explain who the fuck some of these characters are that I've never heard of. And I'm like, okay, I've been holding on. I'm thinking I'm going to be dumping that one, too. yeah. Anyway, please continue.
No, that's really about all. I didn't quite get finished through Blue Book number 2, which is my real life aliens comic book. But I'm most of the way through that, and I've got the third one in my stack that's kind of up next for me. And it's just been delightfully fun as well. If you know anything about the events in 1947 that kind of kicked off our UFO mania in this country, it's a good recap of it all. So how about you, Jeff? Anything to report on that you read?
Yeah, they did a second printing of Bear Pirate Viking Queen. It is anything I tell you is a potential spoiler, other than the art is all done in watercolor. It is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It is one of the best looking comics I've seen, honestly, since, well, you know, David Mack works in watercolor and I like he does, but it's just beautiful, and I can't wait. I haven't had time to read issue 2, which came out this week. Mm-hmm. So the issue 1 second printing and issue 2 came out this week. So you can pick those up over at Volts at 2043 East, 3300 South in Salt Lake City. Give me a call. I ship. I'm really looking forward to it. Do you remember what was it? Dead Romans? Pretty good story, amazing art. And this is kind of where I'm at with this one. Is the story's good. Story's good so far. I'm hooked. I'm interested, but the art is just going to keep me coming back. It just reminds me of a conversation I had this week where, you know, when I was reading through Aaron's Thor, and it was Ribic, and it was just so fucking amazing day to day. And then all of a sudden they changed to Del Mundo, whose art I also like, even, you know, but that was just a knee jerk. And so on this one, I'm glad it's a limited series. They're not going to change because I would hate for anybody else to take over this art. Anyway, that's all I had time to flip through this week. What about you?
For me this week, Scarlet number 1 by Kelly Thompson. I'd say my only issues with this one is it's a very familiar Kelly Thompson story. The best friend in trouble.
I can see that.
It does carry on some of the stuff from the original, you know, from for G.I. Joe and stuff. And Scarlet was always one of my more interesting characters. First, the only girl in the beginning to be put on the Joe team back in when the original action figures came out. Mm-hmm. And she was listed just simply as the intelligence officer. But damn, you looked at her uniform, you know, the molded uniform and everything that was on there. Like, it's like looking at Boba Fett, the original Boba Fett action figure. You're like, he's got all kinds of weapons all over him. There's little arrows over here. There's this over here. And she was the same way. It was like, there's little weapons all over her. And all she has is this dumb crossbow thing. But okay. You know, but at the same time, we like the idea of the crossbow because it was a silent weapon. That was fun. Read Star Trek Celebrations. So this is Star Trek's Star Trek comics from IDW. This is their Pride Month offering. Here's what's cool about this. So it's a bunch of short stories involving different characters from gay characters from Star Trek. Not once does it ever really touch on their gay characters from Star Trek. It's just simply a day in their life or a moment in their life or an adventure that they're on, period. Although there is one where Mariner's going on her first date with Stephanie.
Okay, wait.
Yeah.
You mean to tell me gay people live whole lives and have identities separate from their sexuality, just like straight people do?
In the future.
Normal lives? Yeah.
Oh, in the future. Okay, good. Yeah. I was so confused for a minute, guys.
It's just in comparison to Marvel Pride from last year, where everybody was... The whole thing seemed to be in every story somebody was going to a fucking Pride festival. And I'm like, really? That's the direction we're going to go. And then in DC Pride, it was all about, well, I'm gay. Therefore, I was like, yeah, the only, and even the Dreamer one written by trans actress Nicole Maine was about being trans. And I was like, okay, I get it. This one, it's about being an officer in Starfleet. Like I said, the one that I would ever say was like that was the Mariner going on her first date with Stephanie. That was it. That was it.
Fair.
Everything else was really sad. I was like, thank you. I produced a show many years ago at this point for a New York playwright. They premiered their show in New York. It was a big hit. We decided to do it here. And he came out and I said, what I really like is that all the characters are just, you know, it's like this gay couple that are trying to adopt a kid and yet they've wound up adding a third in their relationship. And I said, you could make this about, you know, a heterosexual couple bringing another woman or another man into the relationship and it would be the same thing. And he goes, yeah, it's post-gay. I mean, that's the word he used because he himself, very gay. And he said, yeah, it's post-gay. And I was like, so this Star Trek was post-gay and I liked that.
I like it. That's awesome.
Profane number one from Boom. Peter Milligan writing this. Okay. I thought I was reading a noir detective novel. That's or comic book. That's what I thought I was going to read. Should have known with Peter Milligan, the twist is chef's kiss. Perfect.
Ooh,
I am excited for the rest of this. Oh my God. So cool. Yeah, it's a trope for a writer, but I fucking loved it. I thought it was great. Wolverine Blood Hunt. So a little short series for Wolverine, fighting the vampires during the Blood Hunt run. So he's kind of minding his own business in Vegas and these vampires attack. So first he's like, okay, but then they say, okay, Logan. It's like these rent-a-cops, all vampires. They're like, okay, Logan. And he's like, what the fuck? They know my name. So he gets away and he goes to this town outside of Barstow into an old bar. And he's sitting there and all of a sudden the military arrives, like the National Guard, all vampires again. And they know his name. And he's like, okay, first of all, vampires don't like me because they can't turn me. He said, you know, I may be a big blood bank for them, but they can't turn me. And so he's like, what the hell's going on? And then, you know, he winds up hooking up with this other vampire that he'd worked with many years ago in the comics. Who's, you know, learned to control her thirst. It was basically a vampire good guy. And so she's helping him out, trying to figure out the mystery. Then the mystery gets solved at the end, which was a great little twist. And, it's a good Wolverine story. And of course, Wolverine gets to do what Wolverine does best. You know, first he's like, I can't kill these young kids who were joining the army just to, you know, help themselves out. And then he realizes, you know, those kids are long gone. They're replaced by these monsters. And Wolverine can do one thing really well with his claws, cut off vampire heads.
True.
Finally, the Ultimates number one. Okay.
Okay. I'll take it. That's enough.
I don't know what the fuck. Again, I didn't read the Ultimate. Was it Ultimate War or whatever
Ultimate
came out?
Ultimate Invasion.
In Ultimate Invasion that explained the universe and had the young Tony Stark, Iron Lad, doing what he did. I was like, okay, that's... So this kind of picks up from that and explains it a little bit, but not as... There's still a little bit I don't know what's going on. And then it just sort of was a jumble. It was. But they're getting the gang together. They're bringing together the Ultimates, the other universes Avengers. So that's fun. We'll see how it goes. And whether or not I keep reading it.
All right.
Because for a $6 book, I didn't feel like I got my $6 out of it. So that's all I'm saying.
I was going to say, when you start with okay, I know it was not great for you.
It was not okay. hey, today's Tuesday. That means tomorrow's Wednesday. It's time to give our picks.
You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
What are you looking forward to this week, Joss?
Well, let's be honest, you guys. There's a Daredevil coming out. It's giant-sized Daredevil number one.
Woohoo!
And Sin will find you out, Daredevil. We finally, you guys, finally Kingpin is going to show back up in Daredevil. We haven't seen Kingpin yet in Saladin Ahmed's run, but here he comes. So he's stalking the streets of Manhattan by night. And no matter the speed with which Daredevil moves, there will be blood. There you go, guys. That's what I'm looking forward to. How about you, Jeff? What's your mainstream pick?
With Marvel, I'm going to go with the trade paperback of Black Widow by Kelly Thompson because I haven't read it.
Mm. It's fantastic.
That's what you guys keep saying, so I'm going to give it a shot.
It's a really good run of Black Widow.
And then DC, also with one of my favorite female writers, has The Secret Six by Gail Simone collected for the first time. This is volume one. And I know very little about The Secret Six. They're not, you know, foremost. But you throw Gail Simone's name on anything. I mean, fuck, I read her Red Sonja run. I read her Wonder Woman run. I'll read anything by Gail Simone. So.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. What about you, boss?
Yeah. Let's see. We're going to go with, from Marvel, we got The Scarlet Witch number one. This is, okay. Dear Steve Orlando and Marvel, you didn't need to suspend the run of the series so you could do Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver for four issues and then come back to The Scarlet Witch. You could have just done that as a sub-story in Scarlet Witch, the regular Scarlet Witch series. But otherwise, no, I've really enjoyed this series. I've enjoyed everything he's done with Wanda, and I want to see more. So I'm excited to see that come back and be able to pick that up. And then from DC, we've got Gotham by Gaslight, the Kryptonian Age number one coming out. So this is 19th century DC universe, got 19th century Gotham City, and Batman, Catwoman, all these characters are showing up. But when a mysterious meteor falls on the wide open plains of the Midwest, it will unleash a chain of events to find Gotham's bizarre Batman contending with not just twin threats of Catwoman and a mysterious international assassin, but also the emergence of superhuman beings beyond all comprehension.
So
DC Universe in the 19th century. I love it.
This one is the first of six Elseworlds titles that are coming. Four of them are Batman, including the one I'm most looking forward to, Batman the Barbarian.
Mm-hmm. That looks like fun.
Yeah.
From Image, then Indie Picks, we've got from Image Comics, Remote Space by Cliff Rathburn. The year is 2450. Earth is dying. The human species has gone down two different evolutionary paths. One used cybernetic augmentation to adapt to space travel. The humans left behind used genetic manipulation to adapt to Earth's worsening climate. For Earth to survive, civilizations need to collide.
Oh.
This looks really cool. I have to admit, I may trade weight on this one, but I'm definitely going to pick this up at some point. This looks really cool. And then Penthouse Comics number 3 is coming out. I do want to comment that PJ Kaioa's cover is definitely a ripoff of an Avengers West Coast cover featuring Scarlet Witch. I mean, it is almost exactly the body shape that she had in it. So I thought that was, I was like, okay, ripping off John Byrne there. But otherwise, yeah, looking forward to this. Love the stories in this. Love that it feels like old school heavy metal, where they were pulling in European, these different European writers, translating them to English and giving us just these amazing stories. We haven't had a lot of sci-fi in this. It's more like just straightforward stuff, which I really fucking like as well. It is insane and I love it. So yeah, Penthouse number 3 coming out. I jumped on the very rare one to order from Dr. Volz. If it doesn't come in, Jeff, just throw me one of the ones that are bagged.
Okay. Know,
the nodding ones. Yeah, I don't care. But yeah, if it does come in, that's the one I want. But yeah, otherwise, the naughty one is fine. That's it. So what are your indie picks, Jeff?
Indie picks this week, Image, Plastic, Death and Dolls by Doug Wagner. Adorable Doug. another corgi, if you will. Look, it's hard to be this tall. You just end up making fun of everybody. I know it's a dick move, but there's very little joyful in my life right now, you know, aside from my relationship. And this is not the place to talk about that. It has its own show. So,
do you know, my kid, who's about your same height, uses me as an armrest all the time. So it's fine. I'm completely used to it, actually.
That's fair. And then Mad Cave has Dick Tracy number 2 coming out. Dick Tracy number 1, solid fucking book.
Really good book.
Yep. So I'm looking forward to number 2 on that one as well. What about you, Jocelyn?
Chip Zdarsky's The Whisper Queen number 2 is coming out. It's a black sand tale. The disgraced assassin Javro leads her friends to find her son, but first they need to get past the legendary killer, the Dark Whisper. It's the miniseries sequel to The White Trees, and I really dug the first book, so I'm going to pick up the second one. And that's it for that.
Outstanding.
Hmm. All right. Well, I guess it's time to jump in our TARDIS and head to August to give our picks of the future. All right, Joss, what's your future pick?
So from Marvel, it's Daredevil. I'm going to just be real with you. It's Woman of Fear. It'll be number 2 of 4. And this is going to be a little side spinoff where we get to see Elektra doing her thing. And it's Daredevil versus the Punisher in this spinoff. So it's one I'm really looking forward to. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be written by Erica Schultz. And our art is Michael Dowling on that one. So I'm looking forward to that. How about you, Jeff?
Looking forward to a title called Hello Darkness. Somehow missed number 1 along the way or forgot about it or something. But it's Garth Ennis, James Tynion IV, and Andy Lanning. The artists are Clunan, Della Dedra, Herzine. I don't care. Like I said, I don't watch horror movies. I don't listen to horror podcasts, but I love horror comics for some reason. And this is an anthology that comes back with a lineup of those writers and those things. I have no idea what the fuck it's about, but I'm going to give it a shot.
Absolutely fair.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. What about you?
For me, from DC Comics in August, we've got Jenny Sparks number 1, written by Tom King. That's all I needed to know. But this is a Wildstorm character, Jenny Sparks, whose whole job is to keep other superheroes in line. Back when she was created for Wildstorm, she was called the spirit of the 20th century. So now she's returning for the 21st century in a miniseries. Captain Atom goes rogue, threatening to destroy the planet he once swore to protect. Can any hero stop him? Well, it may take the most unconventional of them all, Jenny Sparks. The one woman tasked with keeping all the heroes in line, no matter the cost. And so Jenny Sparks versus Captain Atom.
So she's a super-powered babysitter?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's her job.
She's Elizabeth Shue from The Boys.
Yep. She is. And I like that she's got a, she wears this tank top where one half has got a Union Jack on it. So she's apparently British as well. So I'm very happy about that. Looking forward to, and again, Tom King, 6-issue limited series. There's not going to be anything wrong with this book. I can tell you that right now.
It's going to
be an
sure.
amazing book. It's even when the premise sounds completely absurd, I see the name Tom King. It's like, I got to see how he's going to do this. And like with Danger Street, I was like, holy fucking shit, dude. That's amazing. So yeah, Tom King, boom. Grabbing Jenny Sparks number 1, coming out in August.
I love it.
All right. Anything else, kids?
Nothing.
Sorry. I know I told everybody I was sending out a newsletter last week, but things got complicated and I didn't. So I'll be sending it out this week, which means that the fundraiser is still alive. You can pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com, click on there. Do it before I start pestering you with emails. Yeah.
And, join us on our Patreon squad, Patreon, or DFN Media, Patreon.com/DFNmedia.
There we go.
Boy, I was that one messed up. Patreon.com/DFNmedia. Join us every week after the shows. We add extra content, and only our Patreon squad gets to listen to it. This week, we have 10 forgotten DC comics that were recommended. It's a list. You know how we love lists.
We do love a list.
Because we can agree or disagree to our heart's content on these lists. So join us this week for 10 forgotten DC comics. And with that, I'll say, until the vampires know Wolverine's name, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
For Logan.
Snicked.